All right, condition one, let's take a look at that. The inadequate or ineffective doctor leader. The doctor's trying to pilot the vessel, but can't get it to go where they want it to go. If you're a non-assertive type, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to have a predictable problem getting your staff to support change. This is because of your marked need for their approval. That's just part of being non-assertive. You need approval. This, of course, is going to be a factor of how non-assertive you are and how stubborn and short-sighted your team is. You'll know if this describes you if you find yourself at seminars shaking your head and thinking, my staff will never go for that, or you realize that you're looking for tapes or seminars that your staff might accept. You know what I mean, really take to. You're going to find, though, that in the end, it's easier to pick a practice strategy that you think will enable you to reach your goals and then kindly and persistently enforce it on your staff. If you're assertive, on the other hand, there's a pretty good chance that, unless you're careful, you're going to burn your own team out with excessive change. The assertive doctor gets excited about a major practice overhaul of some aspect of the practice that could range from technique to systems, and the staff have trouble making change anyway, and they haven't recovered from the last system or practice makeover. Can you see where this is headed? For those of you who are not assertive, you need to hold fast and continue to insist that staff start giving their scripts or making their reactivation calls or whatever it is that they're resisting. Be firm and be consistent. If you're non-assertive, you need to remember that it takes several weeks to make the turn. It's like turning an oil barge. If you're assertive, you need to remember that an oil barge isn't a 23-foot runabout that can zigzag at will. If you're non-assertive, you'd do well to learn to pilot a 450-foot oil barge. The first thing you would learn that is if you give this barge full throttle, the entire thrust of your massive engines against the 200,000 tons of grease and steel, the first thing you're going to learn is that nothing happens for a while, even after you hit the throttle. The assertive doctor will also gain from such a lesson because he or she would learn soon enough that just because you've shut down the engines doesn't mean that the ship is going to stop then and there. It keeps on going and in the same direction. Piloting a professional practice works exactly the same way, and there's no way you can maneuver your practice vessel without a working knowledge of how it handles. And as to how it handles, I think you're starting to get the idea. It's very slow to get started, almost dead stick responsive in the turns, and it will keep going long after you shut the power off in the same direction. All right, let's look at condition number two. This is where the doctor is blocking the team leadership phenomenon. And I know that there's kind of a shame in this. No one wants this to be put on them. But this could be the very secret to what's been holding you back. The staff knows something that you don't. They're trying to make you see it. But because it's a little bit embarrassing or you don't want to admit that there's something that you're not comfortable doing, you're sitting there denying them of $30,000 or $40,000 of bonusable production. The real problem behind condition number two, the doctor blockage of team leadership, is nothing more than the humanness that's in all of us. The oil barge piloting lessons taught you how a ship handles. Now we need to look at how it communicates. Staff are usually dangerously subtle when it comes to communication. When the lookout on the Titanic called out iceberg, I doubt that the helmsman knew where it was, how big it was, or which way to steer in order to avoid this infamous collision. Because of the staff's fear of losing their jobs, you'll be lucky to get one clear warning about something that you may be doing or saying that's holding back the practice. And remember, if they're not bonus driven, they'll let you plow straight into the iceberg at full speed. There's no reason for them not to. When I go into an office to do an evaluation, it's not unusual that the staff interviews uncover something that would completely destroy the practice. When I ask the staff why their doctor hasn't been told, the staff either tell me that they didn't see it as their place to criticize the doctor, or they'll tell me that they've already told the doctor, but he didn't listen. When I break the bad news to the doctor, he or she is usually horrified to have had no warning about something that could bring on anything from a Medicare audit to license revocation or worse. Staff's dangerous penchant for subtlety is complicated by the fact that we, again by nature, don't want to hear anything bad about ourselves. So these two natural communication barriers are a deadly mixture, us not wanting to hear and staff not wanting to tell. Sometimes our part in the leadership process is not to lead at all, but to be led. Now, that's counterintuitive, isn't it? Those of you who have followed our work over the years know that we identify the secrets to success as often being counterintuitive, exactly the opposite of what you would think. In the leadership process, there comes a time when, because a doctor cannot see what he or she is doing to block the practice, his or her role in leadership is to be led. I have doctors who hear me talk on this subject come up afterwards and jokingly tell me that maybe they should just assume that where their own personal behavioral blockages are concerned, that they are complete idiots. I think they do this kind of poking fun at themselves and maybe pointing out that I've placed too much of the blame on them. But my response to them is sincere when I say that you should only assume you're a complete idiot where staff coaching is concerned if you want to double your practice and cut your stress in half. And I mean that sincerely. All right, condition number 3, no leadership whatsoever. In other words, no one's driving the barge. This is a practice without a leader or a strategy. Oh, it may have a strategy, but since no one's leading, the strategy is not getting worked. Believe it or not, it's easy to end up in this situation, even with great doctors. This comes about in a practice that, first of all, would have an unincentivized team. Either they're not on the bonus, they don't understand the bonus, or it just hasn't caught on. Without the bonus-driven team, all it takes is for the doctor to get a little bit burnt out, distracted, or overworked, and then there's no one aiming for growth. Yes, the staff will usually, out of some basic survival instinct, work to keep the ship off the rocks, but they won't try to go upstream, not without bonus pushing them, or your leadership pulling them. If you suspect that your team haven't accepted the bonus challenge, and you couldn't point to a specific practice growth strategy that you're constantly or consistently trying to work, then you've managed to achieve leadership condition 3, no one's driving. When I come out of one of these practice ghost ships that I've been evaluating, it's interesting to see how both the captain and the crew, that is the doctor and the staff, both thought the other was guiding the vessel. If you ever read the results of the crash investigation of the Exxon Valdez, it reads like Abbott and Costello's Who's On First routine. The official finding reads like this. Number 1, failure of the third mate to properly maneuver the vessel, possibly due to fatigue and excessive workload. Number 2, failure of the master to provide a proper navigation watch, possibly due to impairment from alcohol. Number 3, the failure of the Exxon Shipping Company to supervise and master and provide a rested and sufficient crew for the Exxon Valdez. Number 4, failure of the U.S. Coast Guard to provide an effective vessel trafficking system. And number 5, the lack of effective pilot and escort services. You see, it's not pretty. It's like the Keystone Cops go to sea. So what should your next move be? First, determine which of the 3 leadership conditions that I've described currently exist in your practice, and then take action, the action that was outlined in each one of the various conditions that I described. From time to time, you'll hear a speaker say that when a practice is blocked, that the problem is all in your head. You'll usually hear a lot of hear-hears and amens when this is said. If I could make that statement more specific about how it is that it's all in your head, I would say that the manifestation of the leadership condition of the practice that I've just described is the embodiment of that statement of success all being in your head. See, it's kind of amazing to consider that thoughts are actually things that can bring wealth and happiness, or the reverse. I'm sure you've heard the old saying about leadership: everyone needs to lead, follow, or get out of the way. Well, now you know that based on the unique growth dynamics of professional practice and these 3 conditions, the time will come when you will have to do all 3, lead, follow, and get out of the way, if you hope to attain the next level of practice. I would suggest that, assuming you think it's a good idea, that you listen to this recording with your team. You see, it will be impossible for you to spot condition number 2, where the doctor is the blockage. So get your team to listen to this with you and help you determine which of the 3 leadership conditions the practice is currently in. Now, I realize this isn't easy, If it was easy, it would not be holding you back. Most of the people I work with can learn quickly and accomplish everything except see themselves as the blockage. I was in an office recently where I sat down with the staff, and you know, they gave me the list of what the doctor was doing, and it was an impressive list. It wasn't long, but it was things that would definitely bring a practice to a screeching halt. And all of the numbers, that is the statistics in the practice, bore out everything the staff was saying. So I had a claim and I had corroborating evidence against the doctor. I explained this to the doctor, that the staff needed to bring some things up. See, because I covered it with the doctor, but as is usually the case, the doctor was thinking, I could see it in his eyes. He didn't think I had it right. So I knew I had to get the staff in on this because they could give all the details. They could cite the specific patients' names and times and dates when all of these offenses occur, and they could show exactly how it holds back the practice. So I warned the doctor that the staff were going to lay this out. He assured me that he was ready to hear anything. He said, Greg, after all, this is going to make me rich, isn't it? And you know, he was so typical in that. And the thing that kind of stands out in my mind was that this guy is a very humble person. He wasn't somebody that would normally have trouble taking advice. But when it really came down to it, when the staff threw down on him, and you know, I had instructed them to be diplomatic, not to be petty. They were very straightforward. They laid out times, patients' names, specifics. The doctor was absolutely traumatized. I mean, he was almost shaken when it was done. It was nothing personal. It was simply the things he was doing. And I've seen people guilty of doing things a lot more embarrassing than this doctor was doing. And he was still shattered by it. And afterwards, when the staff left, I had to talk to him. I mean, he wanted to get them back together and tell them that they were wrong. It's just the humanness that's in all of us. He was depressed for several weeks. Staff told me that he was moody. He was quiet. In other words, he was unsupportive of them. But he got over it. Within a couple of weeks, he quit doing the things that he was doing to hold the practice back. And this practice jumped $20,000 a month. So here's kind of what it comes down to. Let me quantify the benefit for you here. Would you be willing to go through 2 weeks of depression and moodiness to gain $20,000 in monthly production? And think of what the profit would be on that if it was in your existing space with your existing team. It's impressive. It's worth it. A friend of mine was going through police training and told me he was coming to the part where they were going to have to use a stun gun on him, and I think he was going to have to get maced also. And he said there was actually people that quit. You know, they've dreamed of being policemen for whatever reason, and they've gone through all this training and selection process, but they come down to this part where they're going to get maced or stun gunned, and some of them quit because they can see a trauma coming. Well, in this case, if you're going to do this procedure like I'm recommending, there's going to be some trauma, but it's worth $20,000 a month or more to anyone willing to do it. So there's my case. There's my question for you. Are you willing to do it? So get your staff together, listen to this recording, and have them help you pinpoint which of the three leadership conditions the practice is currently operating under, and what has to be done to get this practice moving. So thanks for listening.